Welcome to Bedside Imaging for Bedside Image Guided Interventions for Surgeons. My name is Glenn Levine. I am a rural surgeon working in Coquille, Oregon.
And my name is Jennifer Knight, and I am currently at West Virginia University, but in a very, very rural environment, so.
I am the dinosaur on our panel. I very rarely use image guidance for bedside procedures. I learned, obviously, in the era before there was this kind of technology, but I recognize that image-guided technology is only going to become more widespread in the future, so I'm here to learn like everybody else.
And I'm of the generation, I think, that ultrasound has been very incorporated not only into the education, but the training and the continued education for our students today, very much incorporated into my current practice.
I can tell you as a patient, I underwent a transrectal ultrasound prostate biopsy this year, and it was very memorable.
I think the key is what would have been like without the ultrasound.
Our first speaker this morning is Dr. Cynthia Talley. She's from the University of Kentucky at Lexington.
Good morning. Thank you, Dr. Levine and Dr. Knight, for the invitation to speak. I've been asked to speak about intra-abdominal abscess and percutaneous cholecystostomy tube placement. There's some difficulty recruiting interventional radiologists in rural settings, and we have a backlog in urban settings, so ultrasound has been used for diagnosis and then procedures at the bedside, and is working pretty well. It's actually been called the stethoscope of the future. So I have no disclosures. I'll start with the gallbladder drain. This is usually performed for acute cholecystitis, acalculus or calculus cholecystitis. The interventional radiology data says not to perform it for perforation gangrene and pessimitis, so you see there. But what happens if your patient can't go to surgery? So transhepatic and transperitoneal are the two ways to place this drain. Transhepatic is preferred, but there's a few things to consider with that. Maybe less of an approach with these coagulopathy, liver disease, and ascites. You see the complications there. They're rare, rare complications for this. So here's the procedure, and I'll show you in video as well. We're going to use a low Hertz ultrasound. I'll show you a picture of that, phased or curvilinear. And Seldinger technique is typically used for this, and I'll show you the trocar technique as well for the abscess drainage. We're going to use a small needle to just access. Now, the complications for hitting a bowel or something with 18 gauge, 1 millimeter or lower is almost zero. So 18 gauge or smaller. When you aspirate pus or bile, it means you're in. You're going to use a floppy guide wire dilator and then this locking pigtail. So I want to show you an example of what this is. This is, I've taken the brand names off. This is just one example. There's several. Here's a picture, if my mouse is showing up here, of the dilator. And then we've got this. So the key here is you're going to put a straightener in, a metal straightener here, so it goes over the wire. And then once it's in and fed in, this little end of the catheter is attached to a suture. The suture comes out at the top here. So if you pull on that suture, you create the pigtail. You wrap it around a few times and clip it to the top, and you've got a good pigtail that should stay in the gallbladder. The key is when you remove it, let's remove the pigtail. So release and loosen that tab. So what do we do afterward? Well, the tract is matured about 3 to 5 weeks, so what do we do then? So you have a few options. One is that you're going to do a cholecystogram and see if now the gallbladder is draining. If you didn't have any stones and the gallbladder is now cured, there's no more inflammation and it's draining, just take the tube out. The tract will heal on its own. However, if you have stones and it's not draining anymore, you need to think about whether or not your patient can now have surgery. It's interesting that only 30% of patients that get a gallbladder drain ever have their gallbladder taken out. And if they're still too sick, just leave the tube in. Sometimes the drain stops putting out pretty quickly, so you can try to clamp the tube. You can do an early cholecystogram, but still you want to leave it in for that 4 to 6 weeks before taking it out. If your patient is one of those lucky 30% that gets to go to the OR, leave that tube in until you're in the OR. So we're going to take the tube out intraoperatively. Okay, so I'm going to go through a couple cases here. One is, this is a 76-year-old, you see, has a lot of medical problems. Came to our hospital in cardiac arrest, went to our medical ICU. You see, is requiring a lot of assistance. So, of course, we've gotten a CAT scan here, and it shows acute cholecystitis. So here you see the gallbladder is coming up to the top, but just barely. It's thickened. There's some free fluid. So this is my, I'm taking a video here. It's jumping around a little bit, the video, but it's coming. You see, so he's using a curvilinear probe. He's looking at the ultrasound. I'll show you the ultrasound image in a moment. From the picture on the right, he's using this 18-gauge with this trocar, and he's going along the long axis. So the ultrasound is placed this way. The head is screen left. The feet is screen right. And he's watching as this goes in to the gallbladder. And as soon as he sees it, he's going to advance it a little further. He's looking to see, is this good? Do I like this? If you're used to doing some other ultrasound procedures, remember you're looking up. This is similar laparoscopy, okay? You're used to looking up at a screen. Here he's going to remove the trocar piece and get bile. What goes in afterward is that floppy-ended guide wire, and he's going to watch on the screen. I'll show you that in a moment, where the guide wire is actually going into the gallbladder, and then the needle will come off. When the needle comes off, here's your catheter that's going on top, so it's been straightened out. You see that. This is the end that's been straightened out, and it's just going to advance right over the wire. The needle's been taken off, and the catheter is going on. Now, you see the sidewalls here that drain are going to show up. I'll show you the next one now. Are going to show up as little dots. Here you start to see them come into play here. So when you see the little dots, you kind of know where you're going. This is the needle coming in. At this point, we've got the wire. This is all this kind of fuzzy down here. Is the wire in, and you can watch your catheter come right in. So notice a few things about this. You've got your liver here. We've traversed only a small amount of liver up here, which is really the key. You don't want to go through this large piece of it here, right, because you don't have any biliary drainage and the free fluid up here. So you can really see, get a good angle here. It's better to kind of fix things too. So this patient responded, was discharged, and will have an evaluation by us as an outpatient to see if his drain can come out. I'm going to move on to abscess and fluid drainage. The key here is really, do you have a superficial safe route for drainage? Usually this is retroperitoneal, subintrahepatic. I actually like the gutters as well. I think that's pretty amenable. Transpleural you're going to avoid because of the possibility of going obviously through the lung. You can have a pneumothorax after. This is extremely rare, but you should get a chest x-ray after you remove one that's up above the liver and spleen. Transgluteal and deep abdominal are really better for CT guidance. So if you think you've got one ready, then you want to find out where you're going to place this drain. And you really want to find that shortest route like we saw in the last film and find a drain placement that's comfortable. So if you're draining the back, then patients don't want to lay on their drains. So you may want to try to move to the axillary line or anything abdominal from there. Think about where their belt lines are going to be. If you see loculations on your fluid collection, you might think that one drain won't be enough. Does this need operative intervention? Parasitic mycotic probably needs operative intervention. Interventional radiology literature says free fluid is a contraindication. They say that because the patient needs operative intervention. But again, what if your patient is not amenable for operative intervention? Then I think that's more of a relative contraindication. So here's the procedure here. There's a wide range of sizes for these drains, and that really just depends on what it is that you're draining. You can use here, I use the trocar method. I'm going to show you that. You want a three-way stopcock so you can flush. Most people recommend flushing 5 to 15 every 8 hours so you don't clog, especially if you've got real thick pus or bile or blood or whatever it is that you're draining. If it's refractory, you can upsize with more dilators, get a bigger one in, may even take a second drain. And this is successful 60 to 80% of the time, even placing a second drain, not your patient's not needing to go to the OR. And the highest failure rate is going to be peripancreatic in those with any type of bowel fistula. So here's another patient. This is a younger patient, but you see has had a lot of abdominal surgery. A colectomy, a shunt, a Nissen, comes in with pain, in distress. Scan that the ER got shows pneumatosis. And my partner takes the patient for an anesthesiolysis and finds a foreign body that appears to be trying to work its way out the small bowel. So that was removed and an enterotomy is obtained. But with an ileus now, the patient gets a CAT scan. I'm sorry, this is jumping around. And what you'll start to see here is a large abscess coming into play. Look, it even communicates all the way up here. The bowel's distended and angry. So what I typically do after I see something like this is I will triangulate where's the problem, and that way I can try to find out where's the best place for me to drain this. Now, sometimes you think something as big as an abscess like this might need operative intervention. Remember, he's post-op day 8, he's had a lot of surgeries. My partner just told me he has a hostile abdomen. So what can we do now? Interventional radiology was consulted and said this patient was not amenable to drainage. So here's a bedside ultrasound. And there's a few things. Remember when I triangulated, I wanted to see a few of my landmarks. I think it'll come up here in a second. Sorry, it's jumpy. My liver here. And basically, I'm scanning the right upper quadrant to try to find where are the edges of the liver. And then I'm going to scroll down and try to find where's that normal small bowel that was well dilated. What do you see here in the middle? It feels like things kind of go away. So here's a small bowel here, and you actually see peristalsis right there. So it lets you know that that is not an abscess, that's enteric fluid. So what you see here is going to be that air is the air in the abscess. So it's echogenic with shadowing. So a drain was placed there, and another follow-up scan was obtained a few days later, and it shows here, let's see if I can get there, that the abscess is still there. My drain there is in good position, but I would say that's still a persistent abscess. So a fistulogram was obtained and showed that there's a fistula, probably to that area of the small bowel. You see a small bowel opens up. So what they decided to do was to upsize that drain. And so dilators, you could even put in a real large sump drain, so with continuous flushing this time. So because of high output, went home on TPN, but that decreased, it resolved over time, and now the patient's tolerating regular diet without a further surgery. So a way to temporize and potentially not need operation. Here's another patient. This is a 62-year-old male, liver disease, real bad SBP, encephalopathic, and an IR drain was already placed, so I know this is infected fluid. White count is high. Our service, hepatology, even in infectious disease, says that this patient's not a surgical candidate. So we started medical treatment. This is a representative sample of the scan that shows all this free fluid, which of course we know is infected. So what can we do? They're not a surgical candidate. So I looked at this by ultrasound. I see the spleen here, fluid over top, but that's a really small, I can probably drain that, but it's fairly small. So I move closer to the middle. I don't want to hit the stomach. So I'm looking for a good window and then this drops in. And so you see this is going to be abdominal wall, and you have a good window. So here's where we place the trocar technique, and the drain I see coming in right here, real-time, dynamic view of the drain coming in. Now a scan was obtained again for, well, some unknown reason, and the drain is seen here in good position. You see now that the stomach is able to come back to the midline, the organs are more in position because the fluid mass is gone. So at this point, you just go on, cavity's obviously resolved. What's the output of the fluid? Can this be withdrawn? So what happened with this patient was, because that was removed from his abdomen, he woke up. He woke up and he saw his, we talked to him about his advanced directive that said full code. We told him, you know, you're a really sick guy. He says, I know, I want to be DNR DNI now. So his liver failure progressed as we thought. He was able to spend some time though with his family, and he was discharged to hospice. We were able to provide him and his family some time to make the decisions that they needed. Again, we were told that fluid collection was not amenable to drainage. Here's another example of free fluid. This is, so very similar picture, very different patient. Was getting sick, we didn't know why. I put the probe on the belly at the bedside, and what I see is a bunch of debris. So instead of draining, I just stuck a needle in here. Remember, 18 or less, don't worry too much about injury. And I want to try to figure out what it is, and I pull back a bunch of blood. At this point, the crit's normal. The next crit was not normal. So now we've diagnosed what the problem is without needing a CAT scan or embolizations. So the benefits of ultrasound, you can have dynamic imaging like I showed. You don't have to transport the patient, which I think is a real benefit for some of our very sick patients. And of course, you can temporize them to an elective surgery down the road like cholecystectomy. Sometimes they don't need an operation, so anastomotic leak patients that have fluid outside their anastomosis now can be drained and may not ever need anything done to their anastomosis. Just give it time to heal. And of course, those things will also reduce length of stay because they may not need that second operation or that first stay. Disadvantages are, this is obviously user dependent. I told you this is stethoscope of the future. I think this is something we can learn as a benefit to our patients. We're surgeons. I think we should learn to use the ultrasound into procedures. We're very good with our hands anyway. The location in the abdomen will limit somewhat. There are some that are just better for a CAT scan and better for an operation. All right, thank you.